in to sign in. I said stall over there that Mike has done. I will stall over here. Well, I am George Coleman. I have the privilege of being the city president of the Arrowhead and Vail Association. Our community is governed, maybe too strong a word, but is represented by two entities. Well, more than two, because you have your own individual homeowners association. But there is the Arrowhead and Vail Association, and there is the Arrowhead Metro District Association, which will do your representation, your comments from some of the representatives today. But let me go through some of the ground rules, if I could, for today. Following the introductions, and so the remarks that I will be making, in addition to those I've already made, we're going to have an opportunity for discussion initiated from the floor. You've received information already regarding some of the things that have been under consideration. One of the critical items that has already been completed, the rewrite of the design guidelines. But I will be acknowledging speakers from the floor. I will be presenting speakers from the floor with a little microphone that is closer to you. And if you just hold it while you speak, you don't have to hold it to your mouth. You can just hold it near you or somebody next to you can hold it for you. And this allows the people who are joining us today on the telephone, who are not obviously physically here, to hear what's going on at the meeting. And they had, those who are not here today, had an opportunity to submit comments, questions, concerns in advance in email. And we have gotten a few of those. And all of those comments that were sent to us are going to be addressed during our meeting today. Once you're recognized, please identify yourself and where you live. Arrowhead is not the answer to that question. A little bit more specificity is required. Your elected volunteer board consists of, and many of them are here today, Cat Bennett, who is right here. We have George Bigley, who is on our board, who is back there. Thanks. Dan Gallagher is right here. Tim Rock. Tim Will is not here yet. Randy Smith, who's over here. Karen Strong. And me. And the alphabetical order. Because if you know, no one among us who is more equal than the others. This is your elected board. We take our responsibilities seriously, and we are most appreciative to have the involvement that we do. Speaking of involvement, we have the Vail, the Arrowhead and Vail Metro Board, some of whom are present. The current president is Bob Schaefer. We have Bob Rosen, who I know is here. Bob is right here in front. The other members of the Arrowhead and Vail Metro Board are Tom Howard, Vince Riggio, and Tom Svoboda. Their terms just begun, and a couple of them have just begun on the board. The immediate past president just left the board. It was Chris Matlin, whose service was exemplary on behalf of this community. And we also had Dick Gray, who just entered that board. Members of the Design Review Committee, include the following people. I have David Cooper is here. David's right over there. Gail Gelfand is here, right here in front. Kathy Aldo, Pam Fry, and Chip Splatt. Chip, are you here? So three of those board positions, those committee positions, are currently held by homeowners, and two are by outside professionals, landscape architect and an architect. And there's discussion going forward in the future that we might make one of the other positions a professional position as well, so that there is an ease of interaction with people who are not your neighbors, and will give you a greater sense, though it's not, in my estimation, a necessary greater sense, that there is fairness and equanimity. This board, this committee, is exceptional in the way they have been performing their responsibilities. And indeed, Arrowhead is a greatly engaged community in their own governance. So what do I mean by that? Well, we have 16 current active committees. We have 140 members of those committees actively involved. 118 of the 140 are different individuals. The difference between the 118 and the 140 is that some people are gracious enough and perhaps foolish enough and active in more than one committee. So we're most appreciative of that. Communication with the community has been robust. We have two or three town hall meetings a year. Newsletters, which you've received, have been wonderful. That was started by Cynthia Bell and the way she was put things together for us. She continues her responsibility for the community by being the sitting president of one of our homeowners associations and of, I believe, the villages as well. We have email lists, which at times can be annoying, but necessary. We try not to be frivolous in what we distribute to you. We want you to have the information that allows you to make a better utilization, optimize your experience as members of this wonderful community that we call home. Finally, responses are timely. When questions are brought to us, email, verbally, we try to respond to those questions as a board, as a group for you, in a timely manner, not push you off. If there's something we can't answer for you at a particular time, we'll tell you that. We have told you that. If there are things that are ongoing, we tell you that too. We try to keep you engaged and informed. You have received notification about some of our committees. I talked about them today. In terms of committees, there's a couple of new committees that have been formed just for the purpose of communication. We have the Council of Homeowner Association Presidents. We're not in a vacuum. It's not one association. The other associations that have unique problems. Yes, we're one of four concerns. There may be some that are unique to some, but there are those that are unanimously challenging or presenting to the various communities. So this association associations has been a wonderful addition for communication. In addition, we instituted a past president of APA Council. Why lose the institutional memory? Why not build on it? Why try to remember what happened when you weren't even there? Well, those presidents were there. And they were elected as president because they had a little bit more to offer or were able to present an organizational tool that assisted in the way we are being governed. We're going to cover a couple of things. You've received information, executive summary about the design guidelines that have been revised. Thank you, Kathy Bennett, for doing that for us all. That's very helpful. You received information regarding the consideration being given to regulation of short-term rentals. Notice, again, consideration, not a done. It's not close to being done, and may never be done. It's consideration. And that's part of what we're going to hope to gather from all of our commentary and sentiments today. You've received information regarding the now operational upgraded Arrowhead keypad entry system and the increased security that they will provide. We'll hear more about that today. John Hurd, are you sure? Yes, take a look at this. Now, for those of you unable to participate in person today, a call-in number has been provided. You're obviously aware of that because you called in. And callers will be able to listen. Those wishing to submit questions or additional topics have that opportunity. And again, as I mentioned before, we're going to address those during the course of our conversation. The meeting is being recorded. The recording will be subsequently posted on the ADA website. and let's get going. All right, today's topics will include, but are not limited to, wildfire mitigation. Briefly, the Eagle River Fire District has, you can access them at their website, will come and do an assessment, a pre-assessment of your home if you, even I guess for the core, I don't think it's as critical because you have a lot of things around you that aren't going to burn on you right away. They're much further removed. However, the core has done an assessment, I'm pretty sure, and for the individual homes that or that you live in can receive an assessment from the fire district simply by requesting. A little known bit of information is, if you have an assessment done on your home, you get, and you act on it, you get first calls in a fire calamity. Sounds kind of funny, right? You did the mitigation, why are they helping somebody else first? Because you did the mitigation. You took action to protect and preserve not only your home, but your neighbor's home. So by all means, we are encouraging, not the first time you're hearing this, I hope, because this was emailed to you a while back as well, you can go through the Eagle River Fire District. Arrowhead, oh, any questions on that?
Yeah.
Let's jump in.
Chris Benninger, 78 Chesapeake Close. If we get a mitigation plan, it says you need to cut down these trees and remove vegetation, do I have to go through DRC?
Yes. And here's why.
They
don't have to say no. They'll have to go to the DRC because there is an impact all around. There may be information that our design guidelines, our committee has at their disposal that perhaps these mitigators do not have. But it's very unusual that there would be something that is of safety, a safety concern that might be denied.
Want to make a comment on that, David? And also,
David is the chair of the committee.
And also, staff needs to kind of have an opportunity to see what you're doing. You need to put a deposit down so that the equipment that they bring on site protects your neighbors as well as your property. So it's more than just, we want to cut these down, go ahead and do it. As Dirk said, though, from the DRC standpoint, from the safety standpoint, we always agree. That's what we want you to do. We want you to pursue that. But you need to go through the process.
And obviously, fire is not going to come from this necessarily inside our community, but the surrounding parts. So is there any issue addressed with regard to the perimeter of our area and neighborhood as to any mitigation that would come down the hill to our property?
I don't know. I'm not going to make it up. But I will find out. And then I will respond. The board will respond. It's not an I thing. We will respond. Thank you, Brett. Yes?
Yeah.
Robert?
Hold on.
Identify yourself if you would.
Yeah, Rob. He's in Village Town Homes.
And if you could hear that, Rob will look up Village Town Homes.
Don't assume that Court Village is somehow more insulated because it's not. And the reason is that when I was here when they built the village, and we've been here 20 years, they overplanted to make the neighborhoods look mature more quickly. And now we have forests of aspens that are bigger than the building, leaning on the building, touching the roof. They're everywhere. We need a thinning program. And if it has to be done in conjunction with the design review board, as well as the fire authorities, we need a reassessment in the court because we're buried.
We agree. Anybody can get the assessment. However, that is a responsibility of your individual homeowners association in this case. It is something we can share with you in that regard, but that which is not the individual homeowners association is what Britt mentioned because it affects everything that's on the perimeter. That is beyond us. Cindy Engel from Trailside.
Speaking of fire, I've been trying for a while now to get a evacuation plan for people that live up on the mountain because if Cresta Road was impassable, typically I know Cordillera already has an evacuation plan in place. We don't. So I've worked with the Arrowhead Property Management, Paul, and we've come up with an evacuation plan with three or four routes for homeowners that live up on the mountain. And so I just ask you, George, to put that down on record that we discussed that today, and I hope that we'll be able to get that through pretty quickly, or at least reviewed, approved, and through. Thanks.
Thanks, Cindy. We have made notes, and you have made notes simply by putting it into the recorded information that we're having today. Any other questions or statements with regard to the fire mitigation? Let's move on, if we could, to Arrowhead Security System Upgrade. John Herbert from Public Safety is here. You've had a chance, hopefully, to read what was presented to you. Are there questions that you might have of John or of your board? There being no hands raised. Oh, there is one. And we'll come back here, too. Do you identify yourself?
Yeah, hi. I'm Bill Rowe. I live over on Windermere. I'm just curious as to what prompted the need for these changes. In other words, what problem are we trying to solve that wasn't being addressed before adequately that now requires really every single resident to do more and different things than we've ever had to do before? Could you elaborate on that?
I don't think we're really doing anything differently than what we've done in the past. I know the email that's gone out seems to have more requirements on you as homeowners as far as letting us know who comes in and who doesn't come in. That's what we've done in the past. It's really no different. It's just spelling it out. It's an opportunity for you to add a layer of safety and protection for yourself and your neighbors. It enables us to better protect who comes into the community. And then with the code, it gives you the opportunity to allow your friends to come in without having to contact us, especially on the north side of Highway 6. This is mainly for the interior gates of Highway 6. It's not going to allow people to have access to the east or west gates, but to those three gates on the north side, and then Wildflower, and the Greens Gate, and Crestwood Gate.
Well, I would beg to differ because what I understand is, well, certainly in the past at least, and I've had either condos or a home here for many, many, many years, anybody can blow through the gate if they just say who they're going to go see. Now, if they're not pre-approved or on a list, my understanding is, and that is a difference, so it is different, isn't it?
We've always had a list. I mean, when people have people come stay in their homes and when they have contractors come, and if we need to let them in,
that's not the case. It was the rules that we split. That's the problem. It was always the rules that we could let it slide because and I think I'm speaking correctly.
Go ahead.
It just got out of, Arrowhead got more and more populated. I've been here 25 years. We used to always have to call in and get our approved, but it just was a slippery slope and it stopped happening for a long time, and so I think that's where.
So I go back to my original question. What problems were we having with this slippage that causes us now to have this epiphany that we've got to go back to this? It just seems like...
We've had a couple of incidents, and I don't remember the dates, but last year we had somebody go through the front gate late at night, and they went and knocked on several doors. They walked into a home. We've had a couple of incidents. There's been a couple of incidents within the valley. The demographics, but more significant, as significant, I will say more, is the fact that this is going to provide not a cure for a problem, but an assist to each of us who does not, we don't have to call in every time that our aunt is coming because she'll have a code that you will give to her and be able to come in without being deterred or an annoyance. That code can be issued by you for a one day, a very specified period of time, and this way you don't have to worry about it being passed around and going around the system. We'll go to Michelle and then come to you, okay?
So,
Michelle?
Very correct. So
that it's someone,
Michelle Resnick, Glen Eagles Court.
Okay.
So if someone comes to visit me and I haven't provided their name to you guys, are you going to be calling me to make sure it's okay for them to come in?
Yes.
And that is going to happen.
That's
okay?
That's what the board is asking.
That's what the board is asking us to do.
Have they started doing that? Yesterday.
Yeah,
exactly.
We started this week. We started handing out code this week. Well,
there's a learning process, and what we'll ask of you is to help us educate those that are handling it. It's going to take us a little while, and plus, as you have new staff members come in, the more of the sitting staff members that understand the process, the shorter the learning curve will become.
Heather Olson from Casualty Gate. I just wanted to clarify, George, because you seem to say that if a friend or a relative has the code, they can come in unfettered. However, it seems that you still need to be on the list for the front gate. Only on the north side of the highway are you able to do that. Is that correct?
Codes, again, those codes are only available for the north gate. They're available for 8 gates. Really, 5 gates, I'm sorry. The 3 on the north side and the 3 on the interior, 6 gates.
Right. So
the east and west gates, the only people that will ever get through those gates, unless they're tailgating, is people with ABI tags.
Okay.
Bill Rodkey from the West End on Aston Meadow Drive, but there's a keypad there that supposedly is to work on the West Gate down on Aston Meadow. Aston Meadow
Drive. Sign there instructing anybody that doesn't have an ABI tag to go to the main gate. If they call us in there with the cameras that we have in place now, we can tell if they're a homeowner, a contractor, or who they are. If they're not a homeowner, they will have already gone through the gate. We instruct them to come through the main gate. We do not allow them to go in.
That's the second part of the upgrade, too. The camera system that we have now is, you put it in. Tell them what it does.
And it gives us a facial view of every person that pulls up to the keypad. We can see who's there. We can identify if they're, you know, telling us who they are or not. We see their face. We see their vehicle. We know what's going on at that gate. So that's with that east and west gate. The only reason they're calling us is because they don't have an ABI tag. So that tells us immediately they need to come to the main gate.
So to follow up then, why do we have a keypad on the west gate?
It would be best to get rid of them, you know, and we may do that. We may cover them. We haven't covered originally, but with the installation they were put in, and we'll take care of that.
Before we take care of that, I think the board might want to consider holding them for the future, because who knows what we can do to enhance that, what technology comes down the road. So it's not hurting anything to have it now, and it might help us. We're not going to rush to judgment if we take care of that. We're going to see if we get somebody else who hasn't spoken yet. Gail?
I understand there was an incident with a pizza delivery a few weeks ago. Were you made aware of that? At 11 o'clock at night, they were allowed to come through the gate and proceeded to knock on doors with no lights on until they found the right house that ordered the pizza.
I haven't been made aware of that.
Okay. I'm making you aware of it now. And so under those circumstances, at 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, if there's a pizza delivery, do you not think a security person should escort that delivery person into our community?
I have two people on staff after 7 o'clock.
This is a quick example of where the residents who ordered the pie, otherwise turn away the pizza.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That.
Well, you know.
Well, let's make that our policy.
No,
we will turn away. Without somebody having contacted us, we will turn away the pizza, take a slice first, and then send it away. We go over here with Terry.
Terry Gallagher, Amplify. George, this is really a question for you and the board. I feel like I know security is a big part of the AVA budget, and all these new measures cost money. And it seems to me that the reported number of incidences are really relatively low. And so I kind of agree with the gentleman who spoke before that, is this a perceived problem, or is this, you know, I just don't want to overdo it. I don't think we want to live in a place that is so difficult to get into. I think younger buyers are much more inclusive and like a little more openness. So I know that there's some disagreement, but the only thing I would say is before we expand the budget for AVA on security, maybe we could have town hall meetings and
there's no anticipation of doing that, but if that was going to be the case, the budget is always presented
to the owners for their review and for their comment. I assure you that that will continue to be the case, and that we're not anticipating increases in our security expenditures at this time. I think we feel comfortable that what we have just accomplished will be a benefit, and we'd like your indulgence to allow us to go a little bit longer. Let's go through this experience. Nothing is etched in stone. We can move on from that. Dana is next, and then we'll go to Bob.
Thanks, Jerry.
Dana Dunbar. Look, it's time, guys, that we do grow up, put on our 50s pants, and face reality. It's...
Oh, yeah.
We do now.
You can hear me. I do believe that we should be holding a big thank you to our security. They do things which are so unbelievably out of scope to help each of the property owners enjoy something, maybe a big package, maybe a delivery. That's not their job. But by God, if you are good to them, they are good to you. And I think that we all need to face this as a reality. We feel we're in a cocoon. Guys, we are not. There's too many people in this county. You know the influx of people, the road packing, there's gridlock when we go out our gates now. So let's help the security and our HOA do their job because they're only trying to better our lives.
Thank you.
Bob at the Seasons. Regarding the budgets of the Metro District and the AVA, are these posted on the website?
I don't know.
Carol?
Carol? You know what? If not, they will be.
Thank you.
Your money is right here in the account. Oh, yeah, you do receive it with the annual.
We need more than that.
No, I agree.
Okay, I appreciate
it. You do receive it, but that's not about it. We'll put it.
One more question while I have the floor.
You got so much to read.
One more question, Charlie.
Go ahead, Bob.
Regarding communication, I would appreciate when information comes out from AVA or Metro instead of I appreciate Carol puts it out or Marchetti might prepare it. If we put the names of the board of directors on the correspondence so we can become more familiar with who the boards are.
Right. You'll take care of the private security for us. That would be great. I'll discuss it with the board. I have no qualms with doing that. It's an appropriate request. And Dana, I do apologize. I'm not wearing my big boy pants today. So I have a little weather hold for it today. Okay. Other questions of John? Give us some time. John and his crew have worked diligently in putting this together for us, and we appreciate it. Yes, there is a question.
Kate Lagarde, Village Town Homes. I just want to say that during the off-season, I live in another gated community, and about 5 years ago, we put in guidelines similar to this, and it took about a year for everyone to get used to it, and now it's the new normal, and when I started coming out here, I thought it was weird that this community, with all this valuable real estate, had such a lax gate policy. So I think, I echo what the lady said in the back, to a certain extent, I think we're behind the times, and this seems to me very normal relative to my other experience.
Thank you. Thanks very much. The next one. You want to tell me?
I really feel like when most of us moved here and we saw the security gate and the security gate to all the interior streets, we were told it was a limited access community, and for the few times we have a guest, for the few times we order a pizza, to just call 926-2588 and say they're coming in, all it does is it creates a deterrent. And I don't think that's too much to ask, because a deterrent is good. It keeps us all feeling a little more secure. And I don't think it takes a lot of effort to call 2588 and just say,
my one guest this month is coming. So thanks. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I heard about the limited access, too, and that's the only way I was allowed to come in here. I'm somewhat limited. All right, now, we'll continue. We are. John, thank you. Another question. Yes.
John.
Yes, sir.
I live in a secure community.
And
Gary Ellswag, I live in Aspenwood Lodge.
That was
I live
exactly
in
where the kids.
Thank you, Judge. During the off-season, I too live in another gated community in Florida, and they have a website where you're able to manage your own guest list. Is there a way that we could go onto the website and add that guest, delete that guest, put how long we need that guest in there, or do we got to contact you verbally all the time?
We considered that, and we talked about it. We live in a time when some people can do that and some people can't. And to juggle that and handle it, we just thought the best way is for you guys to call us and let us handle it and let us be responsible. I know you could probably do that, but there's some people here that still have flip phones and don't have phones. So it's just, how much is the difference in cost? Randy, how much?
Three times
the difference. So we try to be prudent with your dollars. That is an excellent suggestion, and as John was alluding to, it will happen, I think, in the future, not now. But learn to live with this a little bit, and as some of us much older than you age out, those that are coming in will be much more sophisticated when the internet handles that. the only thing I have is that you all remember that George Smith, we don't have to take him serious.
Okay, so.
You were on site. Stakeholders' participation. Who are the stakeholders? So we have representation from single-family homes, duplex homes, people who live up the hill, people who play golf, people who play tennis, people who live in the court, people who are members of the community, people who are realtors in the community. We have stakeholders group that responded to the ULI, answered a lot of questions, asked a bunch of questions, and the ULI study included a suggestion that we take a look at our design guidelines. So what do we do next? Well, the board considered that we should include that kind of thing in a survey. We sent a survey to the community. The community was asked, what do you want, what are your sentiments in terms of design guidelines? Many of us still refer to the design review committee as the design review board. It's not a board. It's a committee of the ADA. So we went to put together the survey. Survey went out. You and many of our, you, me, and many of our cohorts or our fellow homeowners responded, and that we did like to have a take a look to, well, have to take a look at upgrading our design guidelines, which were last done in the early 90s, I believe, and previous to that, they were done in the mid 80s. It was time. So what happened next? The board, along with the DRC, agreed. The DRC came to the board and said, time to do this, time to take a look at it. The board agreed. We budgeted the money that you graciously approved, or maybe not so graciously, but you approved it, and we are appreciative that you did, because it's important to us all. The Design Guidelines Committee constituted with the board a Design Revision Committee, and then spent the next, how many months, David? Next 7 months in meetings, open meetings with the community, had two such sit-downs, and this group vetted a lot of information. And David's going to take us through that. David has had a, we're very fortunate to have David and the other members of the DRC who are homeowners, including Gail Gelfand, who is up here right now. Bert Solomon, who was so long in the bottom, just went off of there. Just a spectacular offer of insight, professionalism, and knowledge. And then Chip Spradnick, who is now on that board, past president of the ABA. So David, if you could be so kind as to take us to the next step. Let's get you a bit more of those things there, all right? So our process, we did have a committee, as George just said. It was made up of the DRC, the Design Review Committee, as well as another seven people from the community to be a part of that.
Plus, we hired consultants, local consultants, both in architects, landscape architects, and planners, to give us some input on that. So it's, the whole process was meant to and encouraging to maintain the quality of architecture and landscape here in Arrowhead to make it even better. But what ULI said, and it was really very, very astute, was that our existing guidelines were very, very prescriptive. They gave us very specific information of what you could and couldn't do. How many, what percent of stone you had on your house? How, what percent of stucco you had? It was very difficult to work in and give you so much creativity. And when these were written years ago, there were a number of materials that we now use in architecture. I happen to be an architect. We are now using that weren't even on the market 10 years ago. So now we're saying, let's have that opportunity to use this. The flip side, and what you have is, Kathy did a wonderful job of boiling down about 60 pages of guidelines and another 10 addendums to that, those guidelines, into about 3 pages. And I encourage you to take a look at those, read through them. It gives you a synopsis of what it is that the guidelines can and can't do. The other thing that the guidelines, the new guidelines, which the committee, the BDRC committee, adopted in their meeting in July, was to give the committee a bit more authority to say no. So our goal is to let people have some flexibility, let them add to their buildings if they want to remodel, to change. We have our first tear down in Arrowhead, which we've never had before, on Riverside Drive, which is going to mean an enormous boost in the cost of housing on that side, I think. And that's our goal, is to make sure that we have the opportunity to continue to increase the value of our real estate here. We're all homeowners. We're all invested. So we want to be able to do that. So the committee's responsibility is to look at what people bring in, give them some flexibility in what they might design, and see that it makes sense where it is sitting. Does it make sense where it's going to be sit in the neighborhood? Are the buildings around it sensitive? Are we sensitive to other buildings around it? And that's not just architecture, but also landscape. When we start talking about taking down trees, that sometimes a tree that on your property may have a, removing that might have a huge impact on your neighbor. So we want to be able to have an opportunity to say, let's think about that as a neighborhood rather than just as single individual homeowners. So these guidelines, the synopsis, and they are on the website. The new guidelines are on the website, so you can read the entire document, which might help you keep awake at night. It does give you a lot of information. Some of it's written maybe a bit too architectural. Some of it may be maybe a little specific. But I think it will get you a chance to see what it is that we are trying to do in the overall guidance. So, in a nutshell, I think it's a big improvement. It gives people more flexibility for what they want to do. We encourage people. We like to see change. I think we're going to see a number of projects now come through that are a bit more interesting because some of the architecture in Arrowhead, my house included, until I remodeled it, was not very interesting. So I think we're now finding that people want to do some more things, and we should let them do them.
Questions of data or comments? We all such, yes, by all means, that's really one of the microphones back there. David, hang out, see how you are.
Okay.
Just identify yourself.
Rick Cruz on the Greens. It's a bit of a side to what you're saying. We're not here probably as frequently as most of you in the room. Do we keep a record of the contractors we bring in to do various work? And do we rate them or on reliability, price, quality, workmanship? So if we're looking for something, it's as simple as a roofer, a plumber, electrician. Is there a way that we can control that and help us?
I don't know about controlling it, but there is.
Help us.
But what we're doing right now is this homeowners association. The homeowners association presidents, as a group, are putting together exactly that kind of information. So you know who to go to and who to avoid, and what kind of stuff do they do, and do they have they done it well? Has the pricing been good? So the first move I would make is I would speak to the president of your HOA, who has this information or can get it for you. And you can move along in a more expeditious and enlightened manner in that regard. Bob? Bob Rosen.
Bob Rosen, St. Andrew's Place.
That's a great idea.
But a lot of us, probably the majority, are not in homeowners associations. So it would be great if there could be somehow an Arrowhead organization that does the same thing.
Good suggestion. Dan, you have a comment on that?
There is a website now.
Identify yourself if you would.
Dan Gallagher, 68 Ambleside. There is a website now called Nextdoor, which Arrowhead is part of it. And I've noticed that people have gotten used to it. The question of who is a good landscape contractor, who is a good roofer, who is... And there's a great dialogue going back and forth amongst the community about good experiences, bad experiences. So I'd say that's a great, for those who aren't in the association, an additional web, additional resource to answer some of those questions.
Great suggestion. Other comments on the revised guidelines? If I continue this, if you identify yourself.
Jay Golding, Riverbend Court. I live two houses down from that first house that is being torn down. So when I think about this for the first time, I look at the new neighborhood that's being created around me. And so I really want to understand whether I have any input at all in the process of this new house going up and the design, etc. So will I be notified of what the plans are? Am I a participant in any way in that? Because as everyone says, the trees can be taken down, but if they impact the neighbors, someone has to know. So as that neighboring house comes down, there's going to be a very large home being created. What part of the process is the neighbor to be considered in that whole issue?
Well, of course, it's not a proactive one. It's not one where the committee is proactive. All of our meetings that we hold are public meetings, and people are invited to come in and sit in. So if a project's coming through, you have the opportunity to sit in on those meetings, and you can also comment. So it isn't a matter of, and so we don't ask for comment, but we're there as your representative. So we can, and you can also reach out to us as individual members of the committee and ask what's happening or what's going on with that area.
So if you're not a full-time resident of the
right.
area, you have no notice
right.
that some of this is going on, and I guess I'm asking the question if there's an appropriate opportunity to receive notice of some significant changes that would go on.
That's a possibility, certainly, and it's worth talking about. Currently, you know, that's not something we couldn't think about. We have an interesting point in knowledge on these subjects. Terry
Scanlon, I live on Windermere, and I'm a builder here in the neighborhood also. If you do need references, give me a call. We're doing a project on Glen Eagle right now, and we were required to notify all of our neighbors by registered mail within 500 feet that we were starting it before we got approval. So I don't know why Jay wouldn't have gotten that information.
Well,
that is part of the rules we had to follow. So I don't know why Jay wouldn't have gotten
that. But I could be mistaken, Jerry. I did not believe that we did.
The agendas are posted on the design review administration.
Could you speak up? They're having trouble back here hearing you.
Sorry. The agendas are posted on the design review administration website, typically at least a week prior to the meeting.
But that's not on the ADA website. It's on the report right now.
It's on the design review administration website.
However, we'll put a link on
the
ADA site so that you have access to
that.
But still, you've got to be proactive to do that, and I don't know if that's what you're asking for, Jay.
Right.
You want something that's more proactive towards you,
right.
Not something you have to do. So,
this is what I put in that factor that we've got to send out those registered letters.
That's been only the case for new residences and was removed from the current.
All right, how about this? A commitment from your DRC and your board to investigate that most reasonable request, and we'll see what we can do to make this a more friendly type of thing where you have an idea. It doesn't mean that you will have the right to veto, but at least you'll have knowledge that will be shared with you.
I think I might have a real simple solution.
Just Cindy Engel.
Cindy Engel, Trailside, sorry. At Trailside, I'm president of the Trailside HOA, and what we do when anybody wants to remodel or anything in our neighborhood, the board notifies each neighbor of what the plans are. Then the neighbor can call the board with their opinions about it.
He doesn't have a board.
Wait a second. It's the DRB. So in other words, the DRB could notify the neighbors. Give us your, hold on.
We're going to take that into revisement. We will come up with a solution for this.
No, but this is a simple solution if I could just finish. The DRB, all they have to do is notify the two neighbors of what the plan is and ask the neighbors for their opinions if they have any by a deadline. The neighbor needs to know that they do not, they're not able to stop something, but the board takes it under consideration. So at least the DRB would know how the neighbors are feeling, and they can take that into consideration as they go forward. That's what we do at Trailside. It's real simple.
Thank you. Again, DR1. All right, anybody before Cindy spoke before, Cindy, we're going to give you a little bit of a limitation if somebody else wants to speak, so give us a chance here.
When we first started doing the DRB, we were very concerned about this, and how we approached you at that time was that if anybody was in the filing, now the filings have gotten too big, so I think that at least the street people like Goldberg, Riverbend, all those people should be notified. And it's not that hard. Just put it either on an email to us all, then we know what's happening. If not, we're against it. We just don't want to drive down the street and see a house down.
Thank you. You have our assurance. I think we're trying to make that clear, that we will work on something that allows the information to be distributed to the appropriate people. And David, I want to thank you and your group. Spectacular work. Thank you, Stan.
For a time to stand, you got a lot of thanks.
Just one thing, and Gail is here, Bert's here, just Smallman, everybody worked really hard to do it. So it's not just me by any means, it's a good group of people we have
clearly
representing this group. So I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate that.
No one is going coming in here that you're going to get that kind of response. So that's terrific. And we're pleased to that we have a representative from the Arrowhead at Vail Metro District to speak with you. Received what I thought was a spectacular letter, well presented. Somebody must have written it for Bob. that explains everything. But Bob, you take the floor.
Yeah, thanks, George. Bob Rosen, Arrowhead Metro. I've been designated by the board, the president of which is now Bill, to describe to you and explain to you the reasoning and the operation of the proposed 5.5% sales tax, which was covered in reading more depth that was absolutely necessary in this letter. Before I start, I just want to say that this shirt looks like a regular shirt. It's actually bulletproof.
So it's the two questions I'm sure on everybody's mind really are. Why is Metro proposing a new tax? And how is this going to hurt me? And so let me take them up one by one.
Why a new tax? It is a new tax, a sales tax, which we have never had before, but it really is intended to replace the projected reduction in the real estate taxes that we're all going to be paying
over the
foreseeable future. And
the reason for that is something in the Colorado Constitution, which was adopted in 82, called the Gallagher Amendment. Happily not our Gallagher. Yeah, it's not his fault. I think it was adopted with good intentions, but it has unanticipated consequences. The good intentions were that the 80s were a time with increased property values and increased real estate taxes. And apparently, before my time, apparently, there were very dramatic increases in real estate taxes.
So the legislature, Colorado legislature, addressed this by setting limits on real estate taxes. The limit was 55% of statewide, 55% of all real estate taxes had to come from commercial, and 45% had to come from residential. It was a way to try to protect homeowners from quick increases in their real estate taxes. Over time, this hasn't worked out. And the reason why it hasn't worked out is as the real estate, the residential real estate values in Colorado statewide increased, both by virtue of dramatic increased construction because of in-migration and increase in appreciation in the value of homes, primarily in the front range. And I know that over the past 10 years, we have not experienced that same, if any, rate of appreciation. But because of those two factors, the percentage of the appraised value, the real value of our homes, the percentage of that real value of our homes at which Metro can assess taxes has declined precipitously. It's gone from 29% in 82 when this amendment was adopted down to 4 years ago, down to 8%, now down to 7%, projected in 2020, down to 6%. So we have a millage rate of 18.5, and we apply the millage rate against the, what is called the residential assessment rate, which is going to be 6.2 for 2020. And our millage rate at 18.5 times that lower percentage of our real value is going to result in a reduction of our real estate taxes of about a 15% reduction in real estate taxes.
So the source of your revenues for the Metro District is
the entire source of our revenues for the rest of the district is the real estate tax.
So you were just
and our expenses are consist of debt service, the roads, and transportation. Those are the three big buckets. Our real estate revenue, tax revenue, is approximately $2 million. Our expenses are approximately $2
million. Transfer tax goes to ADA. Transfer tax is when you sell your home, the percentage is charged, and that goes to the ADA. So expenses you anticipate, even if they stay flat, would not be offset by revenue since it will be going down.
That's right.
Therefore, the district is telling us they need to do something.
Yeah.
We'll be saving money on one end, and hopefully there'll be income on another end to make up for it.
Thank you, George. And our expenses, they don't remain flat. I mean, we're pretty frugal. But the debt service remains flat.
But the rent goes up with inflation.
Nothing to do with control of that.
But you have done something about the debt service, too.
Well, yeah.
Last year we refinanced the biggest chunk of our debt service. We refinanced $8 million of bonds, and we saved about $700,000
off present value in savings. But it's all back in order
because we ended up with a bond outstanding 1 year shorter than what we refinanced.
So we're going to be... The problem I am talking about is a problem that occurs until 2031. In 2032, whoever is still here is going to be very, very happy with the economic conditions of our state. But we have a situation from now until then, and that's what the sales tax is intended to address.
So you can I heard the board, no voice to speak. Okay, sir. Go right ahead.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you for that question.
Yeah.
The millage rate. The millage rate has been. Arrowhead homeowners, at least 10 years ago, I'm not sure, approved a millage rate of 20. Until 2 or 3 years ago, we held it at 16, and then we raised it from 16 to 18.5 in order to possibly address this problem. We could address this problem short-term by further increasing the millage rate from 18.5 to 20. That would not require any kind of a vote. We have the authorization to do that.
If we did that, all of that additional 1.5 building space would be paid by Arrowhead homeowners.
And I can go on to why the sales tax is a little bit better for us. We think the sales tax is better.
We'll come to that. Yeah. We have one more question there, and then you're next.
Gary Christian, 58 Billy's Place.
Yeah.
So if it's a short-term property, you're talking about sunsetting it?
We are talking about committing that if the remedy sales tax generates more than we need, we will reduce the real estate.
I might need it in the future, so I'm going to still keep it available. If you really say it's a short-term problem, and you're going to get the $700,000, in a few years, then if it's a short-term problem, then you do sunset it, and you don't say, I'll figure it out later. We need
to. Well, as one member of the board, I can't do that, but I take your point. And we will seriously consider sunsetting it when that bond tranche gets paid off in 30 months.
So who pays the village?
Homeowners.
Homeowners. Who pays the sales tax that you propose?
75% non-homeowners.
Okay. And, that's all they do.
Okay. What will it charge them?
All right.
I just want one more about the millage rate.
Yeah.
How much would you actually have to raise the current millage rate in order to make up for the shortfall that you're proposing to close with sales tax?
I would estimate that we'd have to come back to a vote increase the millage rate to 23. But that is I have not done any homework.
So
I've not done any homework on that. It's just, I think we are dealing, we take here, each 1.5 points is about $150,000. We are looking at a shortfall of about $500,000 over the next couple of years. So I know, and it's worth that for that. So I think since we wouldn't want to have to keep coming back, I think we'd have to wait.
Let me finish, please. I just feel like it would be a lot easier for us to be able to assess the value of this if we had a little more detail on the numbers in terms
Absolutely.
Of exactly what
Thank
millage
you.
Rate
sure.
would be needed to do this. And also, I mean, it says the large portion of the sales tax would come from non-Arrowhead homeowners, but I mean, I think I don't know whether you consider the fact that people who actually would pay sales tax on merchandise and food and beverage within the neighborhood actually probably are Arrowhead residents. You know, so that greater detail on those things, I think, would make it much easier for us to be able to evaluate.
Yes, this is the first
right.
meeting. There will be a second meeting. There will also be
take us through how, if this were to become enacted, what would it take to enact it?
It would take a vote of a majority of the voting Colorado residents living in Arrowhead.
Wait a minute. You were going to go into what's actually affected by the tax.
Thank you. That was my It's merchandise sold in Arrowhead. It's basically the CCR Pro Shop and the Vista Restaurant food and beverage, and it's the Broken Arrow food and beverage, and any merchandise that's Broken Arrow.
All of which you received in the preliminary summary.
But not everybody read it. It's ski shop merchandise sales, and it is short-term rentals. Short-term rentals is defined as less than 30 days.
And also,
let me tell you what's on it.
Can I ask one question first?
I guess. Sure.
Well, it's related to what you just read off.
All right.
Could
you stand up, please, and project
sure.
that away?
Sure.
You just heard the Supreme Court real ruling about the fact that Internet sales are going to be able to be charged interstate. Does that mean that anything anybody orders on the Internet,
no.
Hang on a moment, if it's delivered into Arrowhead,
yeah, I understand.
And you got a 4% county tax, and then put 5.5 on top of that?
Right. No. Let me explain.
That's why I asked the question.
Thanks to one of our homeowners, Terry Scanlon, I am actually much more predictive than I otherwise would have been.
You're not going to send me a bill?
This one is Brad. okay. Car purchases, car leases?
No.
Not affected. Building materials? Not affected. Appliances? Not affected.
Anything you buy outside
of Arrowhead?
even if it delivered to your doorstep, is not affected. That includes internet service.
Okay. What about the home, though?
No.
We just expect 50% of the frozen.
That's right. What else? Short-term rentals, as I said. Well, here's one that we might want to consider at some point in the future. Retail and medical marijuana sales would be covered if we had a dispensary in Arrowhead.
That will certainly create with revenues a new high.
A new high. Right. Okay. So that, okay, now the process.
Yeah.
We drafted a ballot. It'll go out for the November election, and it will be sent to all Colorado, all Arrowhead residents, all Colorado residents. And a majority will approve it.
We don't get a majority, so we get approved.
It is only Colorado residents, under state law, only Colorado residents vote on taxes.
We have a question there.
Yes, Dave Hatter asked for Rich Langley. So you projected a certain windfall from short-term rentals, but the short-term rentals are going to be, rules are going to be reviewed for possible...
That's the next on deck in the conversation.
I know that we're projecting a certain amount of windfall on this tax for short-term rentals.
Let me say something. We have... This tax, if and when it's adopted in November of 2018, will not go into effect until July 1st, 2019. The first full year of revenue won't come until the following year. Our projections are that just that. They are closer to... They're affect better than guesstimates, but they are certainly not guesstimates.
We're selling it on a new revenue source for taxes, which we expect and hope will offset the reduction in real estate taxes that we know are coming. The projection for the residential effective rate is projected for 2020.
I would just like to see what the regulations are for short-term rentals.
So we're not there yet. We're not even close to there yet.
This will be proposed for both, independent of what the regulations are for short-term rentals.
I can't go back to that.
Gelfand, 150 Sawad.
This is a what if. Everything we're talking about is based on the Gallagher Act over here and
constitutional.
So in other words, it can't be rescinded or anything.
Well, it was written by a constitutional amendment to the state constitution. There was a bill that was in the legislature this spring, which was killed.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, nothing we can rescind.
We have a question
or
a statement in the back.
Ellie Mazzi, Espenwood Lodge.
Yes.
I have a question about the short-term 5% under 30 days. Who pays that? Do we see an increase in the rental rate? This is an important consideration, though, for those of us who are in the rental operation.
Right.
A little
more about that. I
think it's something to be discussed.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I'm ready. I'm going to keep
it. I wasn't going to have the answer to that question.
Yeah, so I'm not sure
we're
not spoken yet, please.
Current huddle is pine cone. The point that I would make, and this is kind of Econ 101, is that the tax on the rental rate, although it is paid by the renter, may impact, in fact, what the owner gets because you may have to, depending on the market rate, you may have to reduce the base rate of the rent.
That's absolutely right. That is when I sort of jumped to that economic consideration.
Yeah, I know you came to me in that, but how did you come up with a 5.5% rate?
Yeah, look at that.
We're going to see the reason for this stuff.
Right.
It may have 5.5, 5, 6, 5, 5.
So you're just running off their numbers, not necessarily our financial equation.
Oh, that's correct.
And it's also, it might be appropriate, too, when you're trying to maintain a competitive edge with somebody, you find out what they're doing. I'm sure that's part of what the input was. We have someone here, and then Bert.
Who's here?
I think I'm here. Kate McGarr, Village Town Home. Why were club dues and club fees at CPR and Elfman Club excluded?
State law. Yeah, state law. We can't do it. The state law is very specific on what you can qualify, the types of income on which you're going to sell tax. I mean,
I
got a lot of information on that.
That's fine. That's a good answer.
The memberships are...
And that's
the
fees that you pay for things at a club.
Tangible personal property. But if you buy things, not services. Services, that would be a
year.
Food.
That's
the thing, yeah. Okay,
so
food,
what's
it
charged?
Food is a thing.
Pardon? Bert Solomon, Riverbend Court. Bob, for my and other people's information. If you do not... implement the 5.5 tax, sales tax, then what does that translate to in dollars and cents on the mill rate to homeowners?
Well, we had that question before.
We couldn't hear it.
Okay, I'm sorry. Well, the mill rate raises about $100,000 per one point of mill. So we are at 18.5 now. Another 1.5 would raise about $106,000 a year.
What is that going to cost the average homeowner?
The average homeowner?
Well, okay, thank you.
I got it now. $150,000 divided by 700, round numbers,
However, the concern, of course, is that you have that limitation of the 1.5. That doesn't bring in a heck of a lot of money when you increase it, and does it offset the amount that you lose by virtue of the Gallagher? These are all things that A and D is wrestling with and continuing to.
Okay, so I think, when I take more into this, this will be addressed by the board. One is the relationship between the mill rate and the sales tax.
Oh, no.
I don't believe you.
Okay?
Well, I am. I don't know how everyone else feels, but I would love to have you do that comparison because, from my standpoint, I would prefer to stay in the venue of a mill levy rate than add a new tax. Because in the future, you can end up in the situation of both of these going up. I'd rather keep it confined to one. That's just my own opinion.
Let me respond to that.
Okay.
That cannot be done without homeowner uproar.
Of course, I understand that.
He goes, not four guys in my position, depending on 5 years from now, we have to come and ask for an increase in mill rate and an increase in sales tax rate.
No, what I'm saying is you're going to have to ask for one or the other anyway. I would prefer to go with the mill rate.
This is something, correct, I'm a little unclear on it, as to who can vote on it. Just Colorado residents.
Okay.
So those of us who are not, so what is that percentage? I'm sure you know that. I don't know.
Well, I think that in the last election, this was 10 years ago now, I think it was something of the order of magnitude less than half, about 45%.
45% of the owners?
Of the Arabic residents. I call her out.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, that's what much higher than I thought it was.
It's not trivial.
Well, that's
trivial.
Good.
So the takeaway, if I could kind of summarize it, the takeaway today with regard to the sale.
Excuse me. The takeaway. Go ahead.
The takeaway that we have today from the conversation is that you'd like some numbers to look at. You'd like some rationale behind it so that you can make a more enlightened decision. And again, as Bob said, no vote's going to take place until just before the winter. more information is going to be gathered and shared. Another town hall will take place where we will amplify what was presented to you in the letter by that which was given to us today in this meeting, and plus the further investigation of Metro District.
Can I make two more comments? One is, Dan corrected me. I'm assuming he's correct. It's not 40. He said it's 12%. So that's
15%.
Okay. It's much less than I thought. It's definitely. Secondly,
clarify. What is much less?
Well, I know that. And Dan said 15%.
People understand what you're talking about.
And secondly, in addition to the second town hall meeting where we will be responsive to these questions, there will be, with the ballot, there will be a further description of this question.
We have Diane, that's here than there. Okay.
You know, it seems to me from the numbers you're giving that sooner or later we have to increase the millage rate by about 5 points in order to, if we didn't do a sales tax. And right now it's at 18.5. So it'd be roughly a 30% increase in our property taxes.
Roughly.
And
75% of that shortfall to visitors of Arrowhead as opposed to increasing our own personal property taxes. Is that correct?
That's
the real takeaway? We can have somebody else paying for the shortfall as opposed to increasing our own property taxes?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't we want to do this? It sounds like a no-brainer to me.
Well, it sounds like a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
The local shortfall does not have any brains.
That's what it is to the next
Well, almost the next conversation. Is there something you'd like to add? May I give you this, please?
I'd like to add.
Oh.
Yeah. Shirley Hardy, Capitol State. I was wondering, you said the other areas, Bassett Gulch, they already have implemented a sales tax.
Yeah.
Do we have any history on that? Do we know how successful that's been? Have they made up their shortfall? Has it really been what they hoped it would be?
Depends on the community. I can tell you that Bassett Gulch very, very, very low real estate tax. Why? Because their commercial is a risk. Yeah. So
that's the tax
rate. They make great success. Beaver Creek also is very highly commercial. But I don't know if it's just a small risk guy. And these numbers are high generally
office. And
if we said we're wrong, then we'll have to come back to the community with another suggestion.
Bob, thank you very much. I didn't want to let us out. Contrary to what his fellow board members think, his middle name is not Pinata. So that was a very good presentation. Very good takeaway that his group has presented to them to bring back to the Metro District. Speaking of good stuff that this group has done, is that our homeowners, one of the things you would ask us to look into, whether you realize it or not, was an owner's only, your own guess as well, swimming pool. We looked hard and fast into that. Dana was on the committee, Bert was on the committee, Johnny Weissmuller. David, didn't you date Johnny Weissmuller?
Yeah.
No, he was at the very young kid. But to be serious, we looked at 8 different sites for a prospective swimming pool.
We investigated all sorts of different places. We went to other communities. Where did we go, Mark?
We went to Single Tree. We went to Cordillera. We went to Eagle Bay.
Right. We checked Bob Maloney's bathtub and lots of different places that we could swim. However, we found different types of pools. The basic pool that we started to plan on, so we had at least a point of reference, was one that was similar in size and scope to that which we have in just around the corner here. We went out and considered a location, the optimal location of that we could have picked among the eight was not one that was optimal for all communities. It would have been in the southwesternmost portion of the playground by the parking lot. It would have been closest to the boulders. Let's say we accept that. If the boulders would have said, oh, terrific, come on, bring it. We would love having it there, which incidentally, they did not do. Surprise, huh? They did not do that. So even if that was an acknowledgement and acceptance, now we have to go find out what would it take to build this thing. And the basic pool that we were looking at ended up being a box, right? There was a rectangle for great ideas in terms of what we would do to make it more community-friendly and user-friendly, where you could have a private party, et cetera. The basic number was $6 million. So, you want to go forward? Now, you guys ask us to look. Whatever you ask this board to do for you, within reason, Dale, those things you were asking me? Whatever you ask us to do, we as a board are committed to do our job for you. And we appreciate the fact that you do speak up and give us guidance. Short-term rentals. This is not going to be something that handed to you in any conversation that we're about to initiate. This is time for you to give us input. For you to tell us, what about short-term rentals, regulating them, not regulating them, taxing them, not taxing them? What is it that you'd like us to hear? That's
a good question.
Let's define short-term rentals.
Yeah.
It's people under 5 foot. Short-term rentals is less than 30 days. At 30 days or less, anything over 30 days is considered, not just in Colorado, but generally as a long-term rental. Less than 30 days is a short-term rental.
Any terms? So, as a homeowner, and our money goes into
this is on Yelvin,
as a homeowner, as a homeowner, we put in money to create the beautification of our community over here, roads, vegetation, landscaping, the swimming pool, and we're the ones that pay for that. And I feel that the short-term rental people benefit from our money that we put into this, and why can't they pay their portion to help them enjoy it?
So you're not opposed to short-term rentals.
Yes.
You're looking towards them paying a fair share. Okay. Okay. Another comment? We'll go to here and then. Could you argue that?
Diane Lee, Wildflower. I was wondering, does this include the Central Village in that area?
It can include, in these remarks, whatever you want to include. We are your sounding board. We want to hear what you think about what should, what shouldn't be. What do we consider, what do you not want to have considered? So, everything's open. Go right ahead, please.
I looked at my short-term rentals from last year. I hear for 3 or 4 months in the summer, not very much in the winter. And, last year I made like $20,000 on my short-term rentals. None of them were for 7 days or more. So I bought this year, 3 years ago, because of the opportunity to offset my costs with short-term rentals. This would be a
huge impact on me, and I assume on people who were similarly situated. And I would also point out that the change in the rental policy, wherever you are and however it's written, will have an impact on everybody's the market value of their houses or their condos.
Please go ahead.
Ellen Massey again, Aspenwood Lodge. I have owned Unit 110 since 2004. I have always short-termed with occasional long-term rentals through the summer, and I've never had a problem. My property manager is currently, and has always been actually, Arrowhead Property Management, so I keep it right in the family, right next door to the building, and I've been very pleased. I will tell you that if we restrict the rentals, and I'm going to quote from Paul, restrict days. This is a letter that Paul Zasko. Yeah, I was just going to do that. If Paul is the current manager of Arrowhead Property Management.
Paul Zasko.
So here is what he says about the restriction and having just 7 nights or more as a regulation. He says, one rule in particular that could impact you is the minimum 7-night stay. Last year, 65% of all the Arrowhead reservations we booked were from 2 to 6 nights in length. If this rule were to be implemented, there is a reasonable likelihood you could lose 60 to 70% of your current rental revenue.
Okay, where is your residence?
Aspenwood Lodge.
Okay.
Two bedrooms.
Percentage of those that are managed, but this is a question I don't know the answer to, something you have to ask yourself. What percentage of those that that entity is managing are in the core and what are outside, but that also affects it. But
yeah.
That's just part of educating us.
Jeff McCann, you ready? Thanks. Good.
Thank you.
Could you stand? Yep. Hello, I'm Jeff Fleming, Jeff and Sherry. We have actually two properties right now, or one and a half, right, really. We have Dakota, and we also have a condo that we're co-owners of, Spruce Street.
Could we stop the parking? It's tough in the conversations that are going on to hear. So go ahead, Jeff.
Okay. And we have rented both of those. We're part-time residents. And I, first of all, will say that definitely initially coming into this community, the cost of coming into a roughly $1 million real estate market was pretty big shock.
Congratulations.
And we learned you can go higher. But that really was a big factor in that decision. You know, to make that, and to be able to consider it as an investment, especially if you're not here all the time. And so we do both. We also had good experience. We got actually different property managers. We've had both property managers, I think, have done a good job of managing and policing, and we also have really not had any problems. We haven't been aware of any problems that, you know, could cause for community by any of our managers. And our experience has been, I looked at our record, in Dakota, we had one rental that was 7 nights or more,
11.
And two that were 6. You might think maybe the 6 would go for 7, but the rest were 2s and 3s and 4s. And if they're coming here for a weekend, they're not going to buy a week.
So the bottom line is you pull it in based upon certain things that may be considered changing. And that was concerned.
Yeah, it would be a big shock. The other two points I think somebody's already made to echo is, one is, I think a lot of people who are buying in here do make that economic decision and would not be willing to pay as much as they could, or it would reduce the competition, which was important. And lastly, the sales tax question. If you did not have rentals in here, and a 7-day or more would greatly reduce that rental, I don't think they're selling that much food.
So we're going to go to Dana, and then Dana, when you're done, we go to Gary, and Dana's going to hand her microphone.
I think we're all overlooking something that is very important to realize. This development was designed as a private residence. A major thing that we did starting in 1985. Since then, many of you have had wonderful real estate people telling you, buy here, and you automatically make a lot of money. Well, there are many of us who came here to have privacy and a quality of life that we chose. Don't forget that. Now, when we're talking about short-term rentals, there are communities within this valley that do not even allow a short-term. Why? Because the quality of life and the wants of the people stay differently. Now, there are certain situations that have been cropping up in this development. Some of them are, you can have the look of having the village and the more density areas, they probably should have a short term, but not under a week, because you have no idea, they rent it and they bring 10 people to sleep all over. Now, the other reason is that many of us are here because we wanted a private residence of quality and security and peace. There are areas in this area, particularly Aspen Meadows Ridge, that has a situation where an owner has 10 to 12 people different a week, and it is now impinging on the private property owners in this major duplex. They can't even get in and out of their garage, and the other people are here to party, party, party. And they bring more kids, more dogs, they park on the lawns of their neighbors, and then...
I guess you don't like short-term rentals.
But just taking a step, George, when we consider this, consider the swimming pool. It's absolutely outrageous. None of us who would like to have a quiet swim without hearing that damn Marco Polo scream or a football moving your head, it's getting out of hand. We start in June, early June here, having all the housing crews. The rusty kids come in here. One family rent, one union, a unit. And you may have 10 to 14 people all over your unit.
Okay.
You don't know about it.
Hold the conversation.
Stop it, George.
You're not next to me.
You're
next to
me.
Next over there is Gary.
Gary Elflake, Aspen Lodge. I've owned my unit for 20-some-odd years now. I've never rented it out, but I would be an opponent to any restrictions on short-term rentals, because I know tomorrow my property value would, the day after, my property values would reduce by probably 40%. And I've been in that building, like I said, 20-some-odd years. I've never had a problem with any short-term rentals. I don't know of any problem with short-term rentals. But if there is a problem, if somebody's creating a nuisance, if a tenant is creating a nuisance, I'd file a complaint with the board. And the
that's board, what it is. Now this is something that's wrong. Otherwise, what do we do? We sit around and get pissed off. It doesn't do anybody any good. You got to let public safety and they got to let us know the board so we can take action with particular owners. We assure you we'll do that, so that's a great suggestion. You're here, and then we'll
start
something here, and then we'll go across
and
we'll go over there. Go ahead.
I'm Joanne Carhart. I live in Aspen Ridge Lane, and I have a short-term renter next door to me. And I can tell you that it's very much impacted my quality of life. I have short-term renters coming over to my patio, looking in my windows. I can't get out of my driveway. They park on the lawn. They smoke in front of my garage. And on a check-in day and a check-out day, there are vans in and out all day long. When the renters come, they come in vans, they come in cars, they come until 2 o'clock in the morning. Again, they leave at 4 o'clock in the morning. So I really do believe that when Arrowhead was established, that the core was intended to be short-term rentals in lieu of hotels. But I feel that in the residential areas, it was not intended to have your next-door neighbor, after buying a multi-million-dollar house, be a short-term renter. And if it's happened to me, it can happen to you. We have driveways that are very close to each other in our single-family houses. I live in a duplex. It's definitely a terrible experience for my entire family.
That's public safety good engagement.
Yes, and they didn't do anything for a while, and they are now starting. The last three of the four renters parked on the lawn. If they want to wonder why their lawn is not in very good shape, because the renters, they have so many cars, they park on the lawn. I called about the smoking underneath my window when you're not even allowed to smoke outside.
And they,
and they did come up. So those last two instances, they did come up. But I do feel that it's a problem with in the residential gate at versus I think the short-term rental should be definitely allowed if your HOA says it's good in the core, because that's what it was designed to be. But in the residential areas, it doesn't have a place.
Thank you, Rob. Appreciate that.
Okay, Dennis Fade, Aspenwood Lodge. We have owned the property for about 4 years, and we do short-term with an outside rental agency. The ball game is a whole lot different today so far as rental periods. When I started going to Vail and Aspen probably 35 years ago or maybe even longer than that, the norm was that you had people coming in on Saturday, leaving the following Saturday, and that's just the way it was. Well, times have changed. It's now a short-term deal. You have people coming for 3-4 days. Now, at Aspenwood Lodge, it's limited. You have to stay at least 3 days. The experience at Aspenwood Lodge, I think, is pretty darn good. I don't know of complaints from the owners. I don't know of any problems that have been incurring there. I think it's a whole different ball game for the homes outside of the core area. With the management that we have at Aspenwood, and that's going to be very similar through the core area, those folks are really on top of things. If there's a problem, they jump on it, and they take care of it. And there just aren't problems. Parking has been a little bit of an issue, and we're dealing with that right now. But again, it's not been a major issue. Thank you.
As a proposal that some people have made does not include what they're calling the core in terms of limitation on short-term rent. The core being where we are here plus the seagulls go across the way. Again, it's a proposal that somebody made. We're going to go here. Yes, please.
I'm Susan Bifflethwaite. We live here in the Village Townhomes. We've lived here part-time for many years. We've never rented. I just really do not think it is fair to people who have been renting to just yank that out from under them. I mean, I just, that's inequitable.
What would you think about your grandfather here?
Yeah.
The core,
yes, and we have no trouble. Yes, I understand that, but I also would like to speak to how unfair it is for people to have an expectation they can do short-term rental and then have it yanked away from them. It's an issue of fairness.
Clearly it is. Yes.
George, now,
thank you. We're going to go, who's up next? Who did I say we're going to go next? You got the mic. Bert, is that Bert? Go ahead, Bert.
I live in on the river across Highway 6. I look at the core and recognize the fact that the majority of the people are a large part, I won't say majority, bought in with the anticipation of investment rather than a home, and so to be supplementing the cost of that investment with short-term rental. I think that we should look at the core and regulate the short-term rental, but not allow any rentals unless it's for 6 months or a year, outside. What Joanne goes through, what people on, I think it's Aspen Meadow Drive, and at one time on Riverbend Drive, there was a rental program going. It shouldn't be there to interfere with, as Dana says, my quality of life that I came here for peace and quiet. Thank you.
We're over here, and we're also a good man, Ben Terrell.
Meet my impervious coverage requirements, meet my height requirements, put 12 bedrooms, have plenty of parking, and could have a great investment with Hotel Arrowhead somewhere, maybe as one of your neighbors, that you wouldn't necessarily appreciate. So I think we have to look at this in today of terms, in the terms of today's world of what could happen. And it not could happen, it will happen. Because it will be a great investment. You get $300 a night. Who's to say it's got to be up for a week? Why not by the night? So you've got people coming in and out. You can't put a sign up out front, bless you. You can't put a sign up out front, but it could certainly be operated as a short-term hotel.
Yes.
And what's the negative about the short-term rentals? I just wanted to say that when I lived over on Dakota, our next-door neighbor had a short-term rental. And she did not impact us at all. She ran very professional. We didn't see any problems at all. Because of her, we now own a short-term rental at Spruce Street. And
she had any problems with you?
I don't know. Where her short-term rental is, it's not impacting us. We have a short-term rental at Spruce Street, and we check with our neighbors regularly. And they say that we have no impact on their quality of life whatsoever.
I'm Harry Wallace, living in the Seasons. The Seasons was designed for rentals. Almost every unit has a walk-off bedroom. Most people have converted it. We have two units there. One of the units above is one we rent. The biggest problem we have is when it's rented to a family that has several children. can hear the little kids running back and forth. So far, we've been very fortunate. We have a good board of directors in the homeowners association. And if we do away with rentals, my investments are down the tubes.
Do you do voiceovers?
Wow.
Who do I give it? You're here. Hello,
I'm Bruce Saves. I live up on Aspen Ridge Lane. And look, for complete transparency, I am Joanne's neighbor. I want to be very clear. Because I don't want
a little louder.
I am Joanne's neighbor, so I want to be completely transparent here. One of the things that looks like to me when we start putting all this together is that if only 12% of Arrowhead are Colorado residents, and we're going to vote on the sales tax, those of us who are not Colorado residents don't have an opportunity. And then what is going to happen is we're going to regulate the rentals for those like me who are not full-time owners. It just seems like, I know when taxes need to go up, everybody runs from taxes, and I understand that, but it seems like we're putting a little bit of undue burden on those people who are not full-time residents and who are not Colorado residents. So the other thing I would say is, with our situation, we've tried very, very hard to regulate renters. We're using what I consider to be the best rental property management group in the valley. It was actually recommended by Joanne's husband, and so we've tried to limit who goes in there. We've tried very hard to regulate it. I'm sorry that it has not met Joanne's approval, but we've really limited that as much as we can. So I think we've got to look at the full situation.
Okay.
Thank
you.
It
looks like what we're having.
Okay.
Don't have the floor. We'll come back to you. If it's a follow-up question to that, let's get you a microphone specific to that statement, right? Please. Thanks.
Could you just clarify?
Please, the people on the phone need to hear you, too.
Could you just clarify what's the undue burden, please? I didn't.
Maybe he can do it here. Can you clarify what the undue burden is to Joanne's property? Yes.
So, what's the undue burden? Is the undue burden?
To the renter.
To the renter.
Let me ask a question.
Please. But they can't hear you there, Mike, while I was speaking. That's what you're
talking. Okay, so is the undue burden of passing the sales tax? I'm just trying to figure out what the undue burden is. So since I'm not a Colorado resident, I can't vote on the sales tax. Right. Since I am an absentee owner who does rent my property, the sales tax is going to impede the rentals, and then it looks like we're going to regulate the rentals on top of that. So it seems like those people who are local, who live local, and who are Colorado residents, we are taking an unfair part of that burden, and they're passing it on without our
seems to be a two-way conversation. We're in that there. We have a floor over here. Somebody was waiting. You got a quick thing? Anybody who has another thing? Joanne has spoken. We're going to go here and then come back to Joanne. Thank you.
I'm Bob Kurlander from Buffalo Park. We only have 16 units in Buffalo Park. I'm the only full-time resident there, so I have a pretty good idea of what happens with any kind of a letter, short-term or otherwise. And I'll tell you this. Owners care about litter, renters not so much. Owners care about cigarette butts and what their contractors do. Renters, not so much. Owners care about recycling. Our recycling bins are contaminated every single week. So I'm in favor of, even though if they do it with the 5.5% tax, I'm in favor of an additional tax. Also, renters don't care about cleaning up so much after their dogs. Now, some do, some don't. It's an individual circumstance, but for those who don't care so much, it's annoying. And I'm for just a blanket fee, whether it's $25 a month, a week, or $50, however you decide to do it, because renters cost our community extra dollars in cleaning up with them. Thanks, Bob.
Given the different paradigms that we have through fire mitigation assessment. I thought the point about us in the Corps is a very good one, and I think the board could help the various communities move through this. This is happening, it's real, it's accelerating. And we've got people, you know, having evacuation plans, very good idea from the top of the mountain. All you need is somebody with a cigarette up that mountain. So I would like to really strenuously request.
Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Bob. Thank you. I appreciate your transparency and sharing that you are the party wall of Joanne. I would suggest with the two of you get together with the mediator, non-binding, just to communicate reasonable expectations that you would, that you could consensually establish and accept. And then we wouldn't be here.
Well, we'll still be here, but we'll have other stuff to discuss. Thank you. Appreciate that. Ladies and gentlemen, you gave us from your Saturday afternoon. You took time on a day that you could have been hanging out by the pool with a whole bunch of residents.